Hey listeners, welcome back. We're kicking off the new season of The Big Dumb Object with a special Lost episode that was recorded last spring. So if anything doesn't make temporal sense at the time of its release in late fall, well, deal with it.
Oh man, I can't wait to show you. He's been down here for months.
I can't wait to see it.
Sometimes I come down here and just hit him with a stick.
This is so exciting.
Or I make him mix podcasts. All right. Here it is.
That's it?
Jasmine?
I mean, this is cool. Keep one of these in my garage, too. It's just you built up for more than this.
What happened? I left plenty of chicken feed and gray water. Why is Jasmine just a desiccated corpse now?
What's that noise?
Hey, the radon detector is going haywire.
That's your problem.
Well, we should probably wrap this intro up with a gag or something.
Got any ideas?
No. You?
Nope. What if we should probably say something?
Okay. Want to hit him with a stick anyway?
That's going to be a definite yes.
All right, I want to welcome everybody to the new season of The Big Dumb Object. Spring is here, which means that the back end of our audio is going to be full of exciting life and mirth, such as my neighbor's dogs going completely nuts for no reason at all, and also my chickens making all kinds of chicken noises.
New season? Is this your excuse for going 5 months without putting out a new episode?
No, I assure you, I have plenty of different excuses for that. But, hey, with Jasmine now dead, our listeners might notice a new voice here. Her name is Soylent Bean, and I'd like to welcome her to the podcast and not her opinions about the delays between episodes. Soylent Bean, could you introduce yourself to our dozens of listeners?
Oh, hooray! Yes, I'm Soylent Bean.
Who I will refer to as just Bean because that's way too many syllables.
It really is a lot. I didn't think about that when I made the nick.
So, Soylent Bean is actually a new member of our community, coming over from Stixnet, another IRC network, which I believe you run yourself.
I do. I sure do.
And I gotta say, that's especially cool because, to me, a lot of the appeal for IRC is that it is an old specimen of the internet when every person out there was a different character and lunatic and not a fucking Facebook profile. And those little tiny IRC networks run off of a box sitting in somebody's living room corner are just an especially profound realization of that in the modern era. So I think that's amazing.
Thank you very much. And really, I'm just the name because I have people who do work for me.
Well, that you don't need to give all the credit away. Keep some for yourself.
I have the name.
All right, very good. So we're in this world now. And we've been doing what we can inside our own online community to stay sane while those of us who can't usefully contribute to society in its current state are locked up at home.
Yes.
So every night for the last, oh my God, I can't even think of how long it's been. We've been watching a movie together communally as a group.
What were these movies? How many are there? How many times per day?
I have the list in front of me. Yeah, so every night we've been doing it at 9:30. This is on IRC. The way we've been doing it is we select a film. that streams on Netflix or Amazon Prime or can be viewed easily online. There's no point in having people source DVDs any longer. We begin at 9:30 sharp. You use your network time protocol enabled computer, which is any computer that's connected to the internet and has an operating system that's, you know, up to date within the last 20 years or so. And at 9:30, you click start. And on IRC, our, God, I hate this phrase, chat room, we share our camaraderie as the film rolls.
Why don't you like the name chat room?
Because I prefer to say channel. You know, I was on IRC, I don't know, like, I was one of the latecomers. I only got going 20 years ago. And,
Slack.
You know, it was at a time when that was being contrasted against AOL Instant Messenger, and on AIM it was a chat room.
Oh yeah,
but
it was.
If you were one of the cool kids within the context of nerd geek culture, you were on a channel. And so that's an old preference that is, actually not an old preference, an old prejudice that has stuck with me for a long time.
Sounds fair.
So anyway, I have the list here. Time Trap, Sin City, Incoming, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Destination Io, Moon. We watched Moon twice. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny, The Thing with Two Heads, Death Race 2000, It Comes at Night, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Red Dawn, The Corpse Bride, Pan's Labyrinth, Bloodsport, Mortal Kombat, Aramintari, The Blacksmith and the Devil, Tau, Battle Beyond the Stars, Space Raiders, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, Dr. No, Dragonheart, The Endless, Annihilation, The Little Hours, The Life of Brian, Ghostbusters, Class of 1999, Star Chaser, The Legend of Orin, Better Off Dead, From Russia with Love, Rocco's Modern Life, Static Kling, The Naked Gun, The Ritual, Beyond Skyline, The New Barbarians, The Lodgers, Other Life, Extro, Mute, and we all took our shirts off and watched Commando together.
That is a really, really long list.
The length of the list is also impressive.
It is. The length is always impressive.
So this is my commitment to our shut-ins. I will bring you all together from a great distance away without actually coming together to share a little bit of mirth among friends for as long as we have to do this.
Well, you know what? It really is an amazing thing. We started doing it on Stixnet also, but not nearly as amazing as you do it. We usually just do it on the fly. We don't have a schedule. We're not that cool yet. But I think it's really cool. It really does bring everybody together. I
Bean, would you say that I'm more amazing then?
You are right now, right this minute, more amazing in your channel than we are on my network.
I think I was fishing for some more generalized praise there. All right.
So how do you know what movies to pick?
I select them based on the cover art on Netflix and Amazon Prime and so on. And by that standard, you can understand why I selected The Babysitter for last night.
Oh, yeah, well, okay, that makes sense. Do you take suggestions, like movie suggestions?
I do. And because people make suggestions of films that are not trivially available all the time, I've put together a very helpful, very passive-aggressive flowchart that I will link to in our show notes.
Oh, good. That's always helpful.
But the short version is that if we can't get to it easily, or if it's on CBS All Access, no.
Okay, so I heard you do afternoon ones also, like a matinee. What's that?
Because we do have a number of users in Europe and one in Asia. It doesn't make sense to collect everybody together at 9:30 STZ and make them, you know, sit around at 5 a.m. to watch some horrible exploitation movie with the group. So we've been filling that in with stuff like Bob Ross, because everybody loves Bob Ross.
What isn't there to love about Bob Ross? He's amazing.
There is nothing not to love about Bob Ross. Unless you're a fine artist.
Oh, I'm not that at all.
Neither am I. So among our clique, love for Bob Ross is universal. And we also went through the entirety of the Netflix series Lock and Key, ooh, which I think we might actually cover in a future episode. But very briefly, thumbs up.
Yes, 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 yes. I agree. I loved it. Before we get to new business, I have a question for you. And I think everyone watching on the live stream probably has the same thought. Why do you have those big, heavy bags under your eyes?
Well, I'm afraid there isn't enough rouge in my household to cover them. Actually, wait, you wouldn't use rouge. Okay, that's my problem. All right, well, really, it's I gotta say, it's a combination of poor sleep and financial worries right now. I just can't seem to find the right mattress to serve my sleep needs. You know, my current one is all lumpy. It's not supporting my back in a way that keeps my spine aligned. And also, I have all these unpaid bills that are accumulating.
Wow. If only there were a way for someone to give you both money and the means to find a good night's sleep.
If only. Who could do that? Okay, that's enough gazing off wistfully right now. We have a movie to talk about, don't we?
Sure do.
So, Soylent Bean, what can you tell us about the 2017 film Time Trap?
As one of the three films I have watched in the channel.
And the first in our grand adventure.
Yes. Okay, when I first started watching it, I didn't have any clue what was happening. I was very confused. Also, I think I may have been chatting at the same time, so that probably was part of my issue.
That's the idea.
So, I was very lost. And so then I figured it out. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So now they're, the one guy, Hopper, is searching for, I couldn't figure out what. My husband was like, why are we watching this? And I was like, because we have to. It's part of the rules. So we started watching, and I couldn't figure out what Hopper was trying to do. And husband was telling me randomly, well, he's looking for this or whoever he was looking for. His sister, his mother, his father. So we're going through the movie, and they introduce who is my favorite character in the entire thing and should have had a bigger part, was Furby.
Okay, so backing up a little bit, Hopper is a professor of archaeology.
Yeah.
His parents disappeared back in the 70s or something, and they were off on their own individual quest to search for the Fountain of Youth. That is literally their MacGuffin, and they disappeared somewhere off in the wilderness. They disappeared somewhere off in the wilderness, relatively close to a highway, I believe.
Now, you know, I didn't get any of that until like halfway through the movie. I was very lost. I had no idea what was happening. And I was like, okay, well, they're going to look for something. And yeah, I had not a clue what was happening. Again, probably because I was chatting and not really paying attention. But then I started paying attention.
So those paying attention would have been able to say that Hopper, the professor, himself disappears during his search.
Yes.
And a few of his students band together to venture back out and find their lost professor.
Yep.
Yeah. And they bring along a surprisingly awesome character.
Mm-hmm. Furby. Oh my gosh. That kid, he was amazing. He's like hitting on all the girls. And he's like, what, 10, 12? He's fantastic.
12, 13, yeah, yeah.
And, like, his friend, she was like, she wanted to bring him along, and everyone was like, no, no, not Furby. And she was like, we have to bring him. He's my best friend. And
I think the way the movie rationalized this was the students needed a car, which meant that they had to invite one of their friends who has access to her father's Jeep. But the price that comes with that is that she has to bring her little sister along. And the price to that is that her little sister has to bring her 12-year-old friend along. And the 12-year-old is going, hey, college girls.
Yes. He was so great. He should have had a better part, a bigger part. He was really the reason I kept watching the movie.
You know, I have to say, one of the things that really pleased me about the movie was that, you know, the characters that we spend our most time with are basically horror movie teens in a different genre. And this is a comment that I've made about another property before, but here it was done well. They were all lighthearted. They weren't deep characters, but they were certainly likable.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Right. You know, the acting was nothing extraordinary, but it was functional, and these parts were also delivered by people who have done other work and have put down strong performances elsewhere. So this had the feeling of kind of a fun project for them.
You know what else I thought was fun?
Yeah,
when they were throwing out the light sticks, so they keep their. I was like, I get those at the dollar store. I was like, man, I should do that one night.
I actually have a complaint about that coming up.
I was so excited when I saw the light stick. I don't know what it was. I was like, yeah. And I wanted to get more and throw them around my house at night.
Well, obviously you should have while the movie rolled, and we could do a rewatch while you throw around your light sticks, and we could get more Furby.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Furby, I gotta say, when you have a movie like this and there are a couple of child actors on board, oftentimes, as from the audience's perspective, you just want to smash them with a rock or something.
Mm-hmm.
These kids did good work.
Yeah.
Right. Furby was precocious and lovable, and the other characters got in a good dig about the Goonies, which
yes.
I liked. Yeah.
Yeah, they really did. That's what I love Furby. Are we sharing what happened to Furby?
Well, I think we can hit some other stuff before we hit spoilers.
Okay.
So, the feel of the movie is like one of the better episodes of a sci-fi anthology or something, or a Star Trek with a weird high concept planet where it's all just been expanded out to feature length. We're beginning with a sci-fi rule tweak. In this case, you know, I'll give away a little bit here. There's monkeying with the passage of time. And then the movie is running wild with unpacking the what ifs while treating the whole thing as a slowly revealed mystery.
Mm. I agree.
It's shot all right. It had its moments of art. You know, the cinematography and the outdoor scenes was pretty nice. The interior of the cave where most of the film is spent felt awfully soundstagey and didn't really offer much material for the look of things to excel with.
See, I didn't think so, because last summer I went to some caves in Columbus and they looked identical to those. And I was
really?
Like, yeah! When they're like scooching through from one room to the other, I was like, are they in Columbus? I made husband research it. He said no. They weren't, but it does. I was like, that looks exactly like the caves we went to last year.
Okay. I was getting either a soundstage vibe or like a mine or something.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think you could probably see tire tracks in the background here or there.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Right. That was a minor weakness for the setting. I mean,
real cave systems explored by cavers, not spelunkers. Cavers have a joke about how cavers are the people who rescue spelunkers. They're exploring claustrophobic underground systems where, you know, imagine like the separation between the floor and the bottom of your chair at your dinner table. That's a luxurious amount of space for them to be crawling through.
Oh, I had no idea. I know nothing about caving or spelunking.
But anyway, you know, the demands of filming a movie are that people need space to be able to converse with each other and, you know, act out their part. And so, okay, I get it. This on my list of nitpicks is pretty trivial. But while exploring that nitpick, I did kind of say, oh my God, look at how well lit this cave is. And I was delighted when the film rolled out a reason
for
light to be falling down into this cave system. And this was pretty clever. Do you remember the scene when we're looking up at the sky through one of the vertically oriented chambers in the cave system? This movie unveiled one of its clues as to the mystery of what's going on here with actual astronomy.
Yes, I did notice that. I remember that.
Man, I cheered.
Yeah.
When this happened, I guess we can start unveiling spoilers here. So, one of the things that our characters learn is that the passage of time slows down in the cave, and they realize this by seeing that the sun is just zipping by through one of the there's actually a technical term for what you call a vertical cave shaft that can see the sky, but I am blanking on what it is.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And if I used it would merely be me showing off in front of the audience.
That would be not necessarily informing them. That would be normal.
That would be absolutely par for the course for what we do here.
Now, okay, yeah. So I caught on to the whole time thingy faster than they did, and I did not go to archaeology school or any sort of fanciness like they did, so it was really annoying to me that they were like, what is happening? Really? Because the sun keeps going round and round and round. It was very obvious, but they just didn't get it, and I figure I know why, because, you know, you gotta let the movie go on, but I thought they were a little smarter than that.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the challenges that a screenwriter has to work with right here. When the pleasure of the movie is watching the characters do their detective work, it is necessary for them to figure it out after the audience will probably figure it out, just so that the audience has time to, you know, conclude their own investigation. And it's hard to have what should be intelligent characters work at a different pace.
Yeah, because there are times where I've watched movies
feel kind of ridiculous.
The people in the movie figure it out before me, and I'm like, really? And I'm left wondering.
I mean, that's the other risk, because If your characters figure it out before the audience, then, you know, the key is unlocked and the whole thing is blown open by a big speech or, mm-hmm. you know, a lectury explanation of what's going on. And this movie does explain itself to the audience fairly frequently, because if you haven't caught on, it wants you to be able to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And so There's some shepherding of the viewer going on here, and, you know, it's a little bit uncomfortable in the way that we respond to it, but I understand the practical need for it to be there.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, I think that
That reduces to a shoulder shrug from us. Right.
So, poor Furby.
But, poor Furby. All right, we're going heavy into spoilers here. Take us away with Furby.
All right, so he was up at the top, and he's, you know, waiting to talk to the people, and like, you know, hey guys, I'm still here. Okay, now it's nighttime, and they're down there, and they think they've been down there for like 20 minutes, maybe less. And it's now nighttime, and poor Furby is all by himself and eating chocolate in the back of the SUV that they brought. And then the next day, he gets up, and still no friends, can't find him anywhere. And then the friends are like looking, and they're going to this other part of the cave, and one of them finds Furby, and I was like, no! And he was dead. Fell down through the cave hole, and hit his head on a rock, I'm guessing, and was dead. And I was very sad because I was like, okay, he did not have a big enough part. He really didn't. I was really upset about this. So, you know, and then they ended up watching him die, and they watched the video, and it was...
Right. Furby is running his own GoPro.
Yes, he is.
Right.
Yep, he's running
and
his own.
And so for him, the passage of time was different than for the characters in the cave.
Yeah, because then they're, like, doing their, you know, synchronizing their watches and trying to, like, wait a second, it was this time, and we've only been here this time, and then, you know, Furby's GoPro has got,
right.
Like...
They've been in the cave for a few hours.
Yeah.
But from Furby's perspective outside the cave, where time runs at normal speed, it felt like a couple of days for him.
Yeah. So it was long, and I was sad, and then they dragged Furby to another section of the cave where they meet this giant man who comes down out of the hole.
Well, that was later on in the movie.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, so there was more investigation of the problem. And so Furby's death, that informed one of their realizations of the situation that they were in, because Furby's body had delivered, you know, the GoPro to them. Mm-hmm. And gave them a clear glimpse of what was going on in the sky with a foreground object in it.
Oh, yeah.
And this was so clever. I loved it. One of the other kid character is looking at it and realizes that the passage of the sun over the frame as it flicks by is rising up and down relative to the horizon. So it's not just days clicking by, it's years.
Yes, that is. Yeah, they did realize that, and they were shocked.
Right. I loved the way that was delivered. And again, more celestial mechanics, man. You know, how often does that inform a plot in a movie? That I thought that was cool.
That was really good. I remember that part.
Yeah.
Now.
I also loved when the characters go through their moment of, oh my God, how long have we been down here? And it reminded me of a moment that I took away from another time travel movie. It was The Time Machine that came out almost 20 years ago. This was the version where Orlando Bloom had like a side character. That's what I remember from this movie, but you know, it didn't really stick with me, except for this one moment where the protagonist has gone irreversibly far into the future, and there's this moment of emotional realization that the audience potentially shares in, where he's coming to terms with the fact, and this is spoken with no words, that he is farther from home than the separation of the width of the planet can even provide. And it is totally irreversible. And I caught a little whisper of that with
with Time Trap when the characters are realizing, you know, we are way out there. We are way far away, and we didn't even go physically far.
I wanted to see that. I wanted to see outside. I mean, when the one girl climbs through the hole, and she sees the land. I wanted more of that. I really wanted more of that.
Yeah.
But they,
it certainly would have been cool if the characters, you know, had like a head peek mm-hmm. outside every once in a while and, you know, watched different eras of the world. I mean, they're down there so long that geological processes have apparently started to kick in.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. I really wanted to see that. But then again, I like post-apocalyptic things where everything's just dead. That's what I wanted to see.
Yeah. Well, I gave you a taste. You got a spoonful.
No, that was about it. Like, not even a teaspoon. Like a quarter of a teaspoon. So, yeah. So then, then you have... They're trying to do their thing, and this ladder comes down out of the hole. And there's this giant man. And... I thought he was going to be friendly, and then I thought he wasn't going to be friendly.
Uh huh.
And then there were cavemen,
right?
And I was like, okay, what am I watching? And I was just like,
right.
I said, I paused it, and I was like, husband, what is happening right now? Why are there cavemen and spacemen together? I was like, is this some other kind of movie? I didn't understand what was happening. Again, remember, I was also chatting and half paying attention, and now Furby was gone, and here were, I didn't realize exactly what was happening, and and you have cavemen, and you have this spaceman, and the spaceman's trying to help the kids get away from the cavemen, and then his helmet comes off, okay.
Yep.
And I was like, who is that guy? I thought it was Matthew Lillard from the Scream movies and the Scooby-Doo movies. I'm not kidding. I really did. I had to search for it. I was like, who is this guy?
That was not a connection I jumped to, but okay.
I really did, because Matthew Lillard's tall. So I thought it was him. It wasn't him. I actually still have no clue who it was. But I do know that Matthew Lillard has done, like, an enormous amount of Scooby-Doo movies and cartoons. I'm just saying that because I looked it up.
You were also feeling the Scooby-Doo vibe from the cast of characters?
Yes! Oh, my God, totally. Holy crap, yes. It was like, what? So it was really weird, and then, you know, the space alien guy was dying because he didn't have enough oxygen. You could tell on his fancy arm thing. And they tried to save him, but it just didn't work. He just died. But his ladder still lived.
Right.
Which I thought was also weird.
I was enthralled with the moment that the ladder appears. You know, we describe a ladder. It was a CGI effect. It was not an especially well animated one. There are multiple CGI moments in this movie, which were kind of inconsistent. When they were filling a whole screen with CGI, it was often all right. When they were compositing CGI against live action, not so much. But jumping from, you know, kind of a sci-fi magical realism theme to basically an alien sci-fi genre.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yes. It was. Right. It was. And then, you know, they fight off the cavemen. Because cavemen are good fighters, I guess. I don't really know. I couldn't figure that out. But they fight off the cavemen. and really, the cavemen were just trying to protect their people because of whatever was happening. There were sort of flashbacks and, like, flash forwards and, like, flashes of you know, cowboys down in the slow motion. It was very, very confusing, and I did not. And then I see there's Hopper's sister, and he got shot by, I'm not sure who, the caveman, maybe? I don't know. I haven't figured that out. So he's dying, and they drag him to go swimming. Really, it wasn't swimming. It was just into the water, because the spaceman said so, without words. And...
Listen, if you haven't watched this and have listened way past our spoiler warnings, if you have any interest in seeing Predator versus Quest for Fire, this is the movie for you.
Oh, I have not seen that. Okay, so the spaceman, you know, he's dead, and Furby is, I think, in the water too, if I remember correctly. He goes, they put him in the swimming pool. And they put
well that came later on.
Did it?
So
okay.
at this point in the movie, the injuries accumulated by the college age cast of characters are healed in the water. We see that the Fountain of Youth is indeed a literal thing.
Right.
They're able to reconnect with the wounded professor, who sees his lost sister in a deeper section of the cave. And it's this amazing moment, really, where he's on the ground, injured and powerless, in full view.
Yeah.
Well, with his lost sister in full view in a substantially slower section of the cave.
Right, and there's
basically
like,
frozen in time, in terror, and there's not a damn thing he can do about
right,
it.
Right, and there's, like, a cowboys with guns, and then it looks like French soldiers or something. Conquistadors. So...
Yeah, conquistadors.
Yeah. And it's like, I did not understand. I was like, all these people came down here? Like, and have been stuck in this, looks like jelly, basically, because they can't move. And
yep.
And they're just stuck there, and he's looking at his sister like, oh no. And he can't save her. And it was a pretty sad moment there.
Yeah.
And then he's bleeding out.
And we know for his sister, you know, from her perspective, she's not frozen in time. It's real time for her. And it's like just seeing a photograph mm-hmm. of her terror. Mm-hmm.
And he's bleeding out on the ground. And I'm assuming he passes out? I can't remember. Did he pass out and they dragged him?
There was kind of a lame, oh, go on without me moment.
Oh, yeah, that was lame. I did remember that, too.
Yeah, when one of the students catches up with him, and yeah.
And you, but, you know what I thought though, when they saw that part and they go after him, I thought of Toy Story, no toy left behind. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's right. Nice.
You know, a writing rule which I wish more writers would accept is that when you have a character offering themselves up for heroic sacrifice, for when they proclaim, go on without me, I'll hold them off.
Yeah.
I need the circumstances of that moment to be intensely compelling. So much so that the benefit of them saying, just leave me here, doesn't even need to be spoken with words. And here they took their lampshade out of the box with some dialogue. Oh, it makes more sense for me to die here than blah, blah, blah. And yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So then they go back to the other, they escape the mean cavemen, and they go back to where the hole is. What happened? Like, the ladder came down, and one of the girls was going up the ladder. And
right. It's time to get out of here. The cave is now worse than whatever could possibly be outside.
Yeah. And so they're like, screw this. We're just going to escape through the hole no matter how many millions of years we've gone into the future. So the one girl gets up there, and then all of a sudden she's freaking out because it's water. And she sees, like, a scary alien hand coming down at her, and she was like, no, save me. So the dude...
And I did not see that coming.
Yeah. So the guy, like, grabs her leg and is trying to help her, and she's being pulled up into the water, and she's fighting this alien hand when she gets in there, and they just stuff, like, a mouth-breathy thing on her, like a... whatever those things are. Oxygen something or other.
Some kind of scuba system.
Right. And so
they... Right, James Bond style, since it's just a mask with nothing attached to it.
So he puts it on and she can breathe, and she's like, oh, okay. And they're all upset because she's gone off into the water up in the sky, which is weird, too. So, again, I wish I could have seen what it looked like, because now was the world covered in water? I don't know. Was it water world? Don't know. So then they're all upset and they look down. They're trying to escape the crazy caveman. And then one looks at him, tilts his head like, huh? And like pushes the button. Like, I mean, really? Is a caveman really going to push a button? I feel like that's not something that would happen.
He saw something shiny and decided to interact with it. Not just shiny, but I think glowing.
Yeah, but every caveman movie I've ever seen, and I have not seen many, they would not they would not touch shiny things. They would probably run away from it. I mean, I don't know. That was not believable, and it really was like, ugh.
You know what? The history of Homo sapiens is hundreds of thousands of years old. And it's broken up into periods where, yeah, we were the same species, but we didn't act in a recognizably human way. Our anatomical modernity is, only something like 100,000 years ago. And over the period of, merely tens of thousands of years, we go from hunter-gatherer to agricultural to in the last few thousands of years, building civilization in a recognizable sense, and in the last few hundred years, industrializing, creating machines that do work for us. And you know what? Mm-hmm. That required touching a lot of shiny objects.
Yeah, I guess so. I just didn't believe it. I was not here.
We did not ascend above our natural world around us and shape it to our liking by not touching shiny objects.
Yeah, okay, fine. I didn't like it. But anyway, so... so, and like, I rewatched that part because I was like, let me just see this again. And it was still not believable when I watched it the second time. So then...
Okay. So we're watching a movie about multiple onion layers of the passage of time becoming progressively slower, and primitive man is fighting predator, and conquistadors are frozen in time, and one of the characters has been ripped away by the octopus tendril-like hands of an unknown alien presence above... And it wasn't realistic. Hey, okay, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you.
You make it much more exciting than it was. You're a good storyteller. So then the girl who got taken away by these alien hands and fingers sticks her head down into the cave where there's no water, through the water, which was really just a whole little mind thing. I mean, it was like, what? So she was like, it's okay, don't worry about it, and I'm going to save you guys. And she's all, like, pretty, and her hair's done, because they're...
Slicked back.
Yeah, and it looks good.
Yeah.
So she was like, don't worry, and they were like, what? So she's like, just wait. So these things come out of the water, down into the cave, and, like, grab each of the people, because the caveman pushed the button, and the ladder goes away, and they're all caught. So they're all dangling, and the cavemen are trying to, whack at them and stuff like that. And she's just like, don't worry, I got you guys. So these things, like, pull every person up through the water, which I thought was actually really cool. Actually, I really liked that part. I really liked that part. I thought it was neat. I don't remember...
I loved that the rules of how this movie was set up led to a moment where a character is ripped away from the group, being lost to a tiger in the jungle or something. Mm-hmm. It's
She really feels like a piece of human prey being snatched away by something completely horrible. And yet, a flicker of a moment later, she reemerges in confidence, in charge of the situation. All right, everybody listen and shut up. We're getting out of here. And the way the rules are set up, it makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah, it was good. I really liked that part. Although I do want to know how much time passed from the time she got sucked up into the water to the time that she came back to save her friends. I mean, it literally was like 3 seconds, but in the weird way that time went above the cave, I wish I would have known how long it was. Because that was really neat.
750,000 years.
Okay, let's go with that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No, I thought it was neat, though.
Yeah, you know, when you're riding in a time machine and you accidentally lean hard on the accelerator while you're reaching for your chips and you go irreversibly far into the future such that you no longer recognize the geology that that you see around you. I don't know if what the calendar says matters a whole lot.
It matters to me. It matters to me. The little things. So then the tentacles take all the people, and then all of a sudden more tentacles come down, scare the hell out of the cavemen, and it goes into the other cave, and it takes Hopper and Furby, and I was like, oh, Furby.
Yeah.
And then and then you have the next scene.
Right.
Which
caused you some problems, I think.
You know, okay, so...
And by the way, this is going to be our final spoiler warning. We're apparently narrating the whole film.
We are.
And,
we are.
If you don't want to know how the last 5 minutes work out, this is your time to...
fast forward. Is that a thing?
I guess. Yeah, you can fast forward on a podcast. All right.
So, okay. Dixie C is this pool of water. And there is Furby, and there is Hopper, and Furby wakes up, and he's freaking out, and he's looking around, and he sees Hopper, and Hopper wakes up, and Hopper freaks out, and they scream at each other, which was really kind of cute and funny, because it was like a typical kind of movie thing.
Yep.
But, so here's what I thought when I watched that. Now, we watch a lot of TV shows with like superheroes, and if you've ever, or even I guess it's probably in comic books too, the Lazarus Pit. You know what that is?
Why don't you spell that out for our viewers?
Our
viewers on the live stream and our listeners on the podcast.
Okay, Lazarus, Lazarus, Lazarus Pit,
as in Lazarus of the Bible,
right? And it's Pit, P-I-T. So,
yep.
The Lazarus Pit is in, like, Gotham and all these other things. And characters go into the Lazarus Pit, and they come out, well, like, if they're dead, and then they go in there, or somebody puts them in there, and they come out, and they're, like, super evil. And they don't know, their whole being has changed. So, when these people wake up in the water, that's what I expected. And I was sorely disappointed that Furby wasn't crazy, and that Hopper wasn't crazy, because I was really expecting, like, them to go on this murderous spree and just start, like, going crazy in there, and they just woke up, and then their friends are there, they're all dressed nice, and their hair's done, and they're like, hey, guys! Like, it's nothing. Like, hey, guys! And I was so upset. Well, then, you know, then there was a sweet part, because you look over, and there's another pool, and who do you see? You see Hopper's sister, his mother, and his father. And that part was sweet, because he
And the bodies of the parents were in the cave. They were discovered by the students.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But that part there with the rest of the family, and they got them, and Hopper was so happy. And I was curious, I mean, I wanted to see interaction between Hopper and his parents, where he's probably older than what his parents were when they found them.
Yep.
I really wanted to see how that interaction went, but they didn't do that. and you look out the window, and there, what I'm assuming is Earth, and I don't know what's happening, but there's this big gray swirly thing. And I wanted to know what that was.
Uh-huh.
And then it ends. And I turned to husband, I was like, are you kidding me right now? I'm like, you cannot be serious. I was inconsolable. I was so upset. I was like, and they're not going to make a second one. I have no idea how far in the future they are, what the world is like, what kind of technological advances happened. I know nothing about that. And that's, and then it ends and that's it.
So you wanted the epilogue to be colored in.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That would have like brought it all together. And I would have been like, yeah, that's so amazing. And there they are in the future. And now they have this and that. And poor Earth is broken. But they didn't do any of that. And I was very sad. And my husband laughed at me. But I was not happy about it. I was like, no way. This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah. See, I don't feel like I needed a tour of the flying cars that exist now, or, you know, I don't need to see what food looks like the year 750,000 AD.
No, that's not what I mean. It was just like, I don't know what I was looking for. Again, I read a lot of post-apocalyptic stories, so I was expecting like destruction and, or maybe the after destruction part of it, or maybe they're all living in a bubble. Or, I don't know, I'll never know now. I can make it up in my head, but I'll never know.
Sure, of course you can. I mean, the pleasure of the movie is watching the characters unravel what's going on with the time mystery of the cave. And when they get whacked in the head with, well, here's the next thing that's being dumped on you. So, you know, it's like when we get to the resolution, we're given a happy ending, but it's like, I don't feel like I need to see the wedding scene, after, you know, our principal characters fall in love, or I don't need to see them sign the mortgage on their new home, or, you know, things like that. And none of this happened. None of this was going to happen in the movie, by the way. This is just me talking to the sky.
Yeah, I suppose. Right. But man, I really wanted, I wanted it all wrapped up in a nice little package.
I don't need to see the time child's first words.
What? What? Everybody needs to see the time child's first words. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I gotta say, I felt conflicting about the ending. You know, I don't mind that it's a happy ending. I loved the way that it was delivered, that, you know, that I talked about the transition from a piece of prey to becoming the cavalry charging in. Mm-hmm. With just the flick of a finger, the snap of a finger. That was cool. My objections here, and this is probably my biggest point of criticism for the movie, is that the characters did not really get out of the cave by solving the mystery.
No, they didn't.
Right. Their work inside the cave to figure out what was going on did not really inform their exit. Had they just sat around and played tic-tac-toe, you know, they probably would have eventually been rescued by the tendrils above. I think I would have liked it if the script had done something where they are aware of this big giant space station above Earth, which they do become aware of with a piece of video exposition that future man Predator gives them.
and maybe things in the cave get so bad that they question whether or not they're gonna fight inside the cave or call attention to this big giant thing in the sky, maybe with like walkie-talkies or something,
right.
and they can rig the antenna to send out a broadcast or something and roll their dice by confronting whatever this thing in the sky, in the future sky is. That would have been kind of cool.
That would have been cool too.
And then they could have had the same scene unwrap. But, you know, so if you watch critically, there's a question of whether or not anything they do really matters. And the answer is no. But what they did was fun.
Yeah.
The other thing is that... And this to me is one of my... I want to see writers observe this rule much more universally. Death is not punished. Multiple dead characters are revived at the very end. And ordinarily, I would consider this to be just an egregious movie sin. You know, if you can't die, or if you can just be raised from the dead when the movie requires the right emotional cue... then nothing matters.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was a huge problem in this one, just because when the resurrections do occur, it's not like we have any need for further dramatic tension at that point in the movie. So, you know, whatever. I just wish that had been done a little bit more cleanly.
I am glad I got to watch it, though. It was not something I would normally watch. But I was happy I got to watch it.
Well, if you join us for more of our viewings, you're going to watch all kinds of crap
that you
wouldn't normally watch.
I know. I have issue with it sometimes. I just can't. Well, you know, I have a child, and he is 12, and takes up a lot of energy.
Right.
So, you know.
So, right. You know, there's a connection here to the film. When Furby, who's about 12, is among his college girls, one of them says, you're like something out of the Goonies or something like that. And Furby hasn't seen the Goonies. Has your son seen the Goonies?
He doesn't even watch TV.
All right. Has he seen Alien?
Nope. He doesn't, you know, he only watches movies.
Has he seen Terminator 2?
What?
Has he seen Terminator 2?
Nope.
Okay. So this, I don't blame you. I blame the schools. And right now, this is an opportunity, while we're all stuck at home, for you to deeply enrich your son's life.
I'd like to. But he doesn't.
I think your 12-year-old son ought to join our circle for a real head-exploding exploitation horror flick.
He would probably walk away after like 5 minutes and be like, "Yeah, I'm not interested." You know, he doesn't watch movies except for in the theater.
I'm concerned for the state of our culture.
I know. He's looking at me like I'm crazy right now.
if only he understood.
Yeah, if only.
Yeah.
I've tried to educate him on things to watch. He just pointed at me and told me no.
Well, you know what? I think this brings us around to our second channel contest, and I'm going to open it up to our listeners and our viewers on the live stream. Right into the show, make a film recommendation for Bean's son, and make it something that matters. And if we can get a thumbs up out of him, you are going to receive your very own signed copy of the novelization of Mortal Kombat, the motion picture.
And how about the Skippy cross-stitch?
Oh, that's right. You know what? We had a piece of old business there that we didn't go over.
That's right.
You know, those of you who swing over to our website, skiffy.club, that is skiffy.club, will notice that we have a new piece of splash art right there, front and center, that was contributed by our own Soylent Bean. Bean, what the hell is this thing?
Well, it is all the things that represent the channel. So let me pull it up because I haven't looked at it in a long time. Also, I was typing on the wrong computer. Oh, there it is.
Hey, if you're watching the live stream, stop laughing.
Okay, so a new Athens, a channel upon a hill. So we have the big dumb object, which is in green there. Now, that right there, that thing took me and my husband some time to create. First, we drew it out on graph paper, and then we realized it was going to be like 17 inches big.
Right. So this is a cross stitch.
Yes.
You're working with what looks like a piece of thickly woven cheesecloth, right?
Yes, pretty much. Yes.
Right.
And then you use embroidery.
And those are your pixels.
And a needle. And then a lot of people follow patterns. Some people have printed on the fabric. I do not do printed on the fabric. I just follow the pattern on the computer or on a piece of paper. So anyway, we created this ourselves. I knew how to draw a brick. That wasn't too hard. So we have the big dumb object. We have the channel brick. And we have the channel bucket.
And these are all symbols of the power of the channel.
And straws to drink out of the bucket.
You don't want to drink out of that bucket.
No, I still have not figured out why I had to put straws in there, but...
You don't even want the EPA to be aware of that bucket.
Oh, that's scary. So we have the Skiffy cross stitch, which is the symbol on the page, and I think I did a pretty damn good job.
Yeah, this is a physical object created by Soylent Bean when she was almost a brand new user.
Gosh, I think I was only
within our community.
You were
a couple of weeks in at
probably
most.
Probably a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you contributed a relic to our treasury.
It was so fun.
And I think the plan is that this thing is still in your possession, and we would like to pass it around.
Yes, I still have it. It's over there in a bin, in a bucket, in a basket. Basket, it's in a basket. Trying to figure out what it was in. Yes, it's in a basket over there.
It's in a container of thickly woven straw, or...
Yes. Let's just say that.
Okay.
Works.
Not like an injection molded imitation of a straw vessel.
No.
Okay. That's important.
Not sending a basket though. You're just getting the cross stitch.
You're just getting the cross stitch.
I might put it in a frame for whoever gets it. I could do that. That's a thing.
So hey, if you can contribute to the upbringing of Bean's son, you will receive this original cross stitch containing the symbols of power of our community.
Yes, definitely. I will send it out with haste. Now, remember, when you're picking a movie, he's 12. We don't need, you know, lady bits showing. He doesn't need to see that yet.
Do you think he's ready for A Clockwork Orange?
Absolutely not.
How about Fight Club?
He probably wouldn't want to watch that. He'd probably get up and walk away.
Okay.
Love it.
All right. Well, hey,
Right now, movie nights are indeed ongoing. At the time of this recording, it looks like some parts of the world may potentially begin opening up. One of our users in New Zealand may have his ability to resume domestic travel very shortly. But for the rest of us stuck at home, we're going to keep doing this for as long as we have to, because your sanity is of meager value to us.
Fair point. But I think we should do it as long as we want to, whether anybody else wants to or wants us to.
I feel motivated and mobilized by a sense of duty.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Well, hey, after my journey across the Plague Lands, I do want to be serious for a moment and extend some thanks to people involved in, you know, making the world work right now. Medical workers get their own pat on the back ad buffers at the moment, but it goes beyond that. You know, you look at a hospital, and that's a place where somebody's got to run the physical plant.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't necessarily have biohazard training. Somebody has to drive the truck that delivers the parts to repair the parts that break down in that physical plant. If those parts are imported, then they got to be pulled off of a boat by a longshoreman or removed from an airplane by a parcel company or postal workers. And food still needs to be distributed. It goes on. The number of people who are required to make society continue running at a basic level is incredible. And they're still out there. They're still working. Your mailman is out there every day, still working. Grocery store employees. Cam girls with something to wiggle at night.
That's the important part.
All
That's
of you.
The most important.
Thank you. quite possibly. I mean, if movie night isn't doing it for you, then you've got other options.
There you go. Cam girls.
Right. So, hey, after all that, Bean, I think we need to break you in with your first How to Reach Us blathering segment.
Oh, okay. We are the podcast of Skippy for an IRC community on the Freenode network.
Which is not a fucking Discord or Slacker channel.
Ew, yep. If you're not familiar with IRC, we have instructions on how to connect on the website.
So, hey, if you'd like to reach any of us individually, we will bury Dazmi with a USB stick full of whatever gets sent to dazmi@skiffy.club.
And you can reach snaked@skiffy.club.
And Soylent Bean doesn't know this yet, but you can reach her at soylentbean@skiffy.club.
What? I had no idea.
And I'm going to give you the login credentials when we're done here.
Yay!
There are actually only three people with skiffy.club email addresses, and you're now among them.
Yes! That's exciting. Thank you.
So anyway, finally, if you own the mineral rights to a parcel of land that is at least 2.5 by about 6 feet that you would like to donate to the Dazmi Disposal Ditch Development Corporation, you can reach all of us at podcast@skiffy.club.
And the Big Dumb Object is a production of the Ministry of Fan Finnish Propaganda.
All right. So should we chit-chat a little bit as the fade-out music kicks in?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't have anything to talk about, so let's hope that gets... Let's hope the volume goes up quickly.
Yeah, let's do that. I don't have anything to talk about. Small talk down.
And we're done.